I'm John Betts with my good colleague, Gregory Copley of Defense and Foreign Affairs, who indulges me to educate me on the crown that once upon a time America was part of. And then some rough conversations, some events, the end of the 18th century, and here we are, cut off from Mother Britain. But I learned from a new biography of James I, James VI of Scotland, with a Scottish brogue, that is the Stuarts, that his imagination included the divine right of kings. And he derived his power from God Almighty. He was a Protestant, not a Catholic, and he was quite inventive. He was a philologist. He invented words. He watched Shakespeare's plays, especially King Lear, very carefully. He had an imagination, and he wrote very well. He wrote so well that it upset his subjects, because they didn't know whether the king should be so ordinary of a pen master, but he was. His son Charles I, however, fell afoul of Parliament, and herein is the tension that I'm discovering the U.S. comes out of. Does the king's power derive from God and then flows to Parliament, or does the king's power derive from the Parliament? And the men of the Parliament are all of different origins, but collectively they speak for the people. Gregory, it wasn't settled by cutting off Charles I's head. Has it been settled today? Does the power of the king flow from God, the divine right, to Charles and therefore to the Parliament? Or does Parliament empower the king? Is that a debate anywhere?
It is a debate, but it's much more brutal at one end and nuanced at the other. Is it Parliament which gives life to the crown, or the crown which gives life to Parliament, which is how it evolved, particularly after James VI or James I, and particularly after George III, who basically saw the transition of power away from the crown into the Parliament, but was acting as a moderating influence on the Parliament, or does power emanate from the population as a whole? And getting into that business we were talking about earlier about social contracts, the social contract exists in legality between the population and the Parliament today because of more or less universal suffrage. But in fact, that's a legalism, so that the government acts according to the laws which it creates, theoretically with the authority of the population. And the social contract between the population and the monarch exists simply because of the guardianship which the crown is supposedly holding for the population. In other words, the crown is supposed to embody the values of the society, whereas the parliament embodies the power to enforce the laws which it has itself created and to which the king or the sovereign has assented. So therefore you've got these naturally competitive areas of power. The only one which has a true relationship these days is between the population at its basic level throughout the state and the crown. In the case of the United States, between the population and the Constitution. And the more you undermine the Constitution or undermine the crown, the more you give power to politicians, which has always been the concern of the British crown, for example, under whether it was, as Charles I discovered, and Charles II was very careful to deal with, you have to learn to balance how much power you give people who are greedy for power, namely politicians. What we've seen mostly in the period since James the I came in, the Stuarts came onto the throne in England as well as in Scotland, was that you had monarchs who were mostly not seeking power. They had, you know, as much power as they wanted, and it blighted them on many occasions. So they were there curtailing the power of Parliament. And Parliament gained in power enormously, particularly during the Civil War, which cost Charles I his head. That demonstrated, if you like, that that people were prepared to take things into their own hands with Oliver Cromwell and the Roundheads, for example. This came out from a pro-monarchy and an anti-monarchy section of Parliament, and even the anti-monarchy part of Parliament was not initially against the Crown. It was against the Crown showing itself as being too similar to the Catholic Church and the teachings of the Pope in Rome. Essentially, it was like, are you British enough for us or not? And anyway,
we've got 30 seconds, Gregory. Go ahead. Yeah.
We're now in a war between the Parliament and the Crown. And what we're seeing now is that the ultra-left within the Labour Party in power is to try to stir up public animation and disrespect for the Crown. Crown is resisting that by very moderate means and doing a heck of a job of it at the moment. But basically, make no mistake, Prime Minister Keir Starmer is hoping to destroy King Charles before King Charles exercises his constitutional right to call new elections in Britain.
Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs, my guide on Mother Britain.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.